B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
Brought to us by Landis Block, your one-stop shop, great jaw-dropping outdoor paradise. Online at landisbc.com. Sixers talk, Eagles talk going on a Friday as we go into a playoff football round. And Brian Westbrook will not be on the show today, so I'll just have to give you my three selections. Then Tyrone, you'll give your three as well.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
Because I know you have a big play this week. You like a certain team. You like one certain team more than another.
Yes.
We'll see if that is. Brenton in New Cumberland. You're on 97.5 Fanatic. What's up, Brenton?
Hey, how you doing?
How's good, buddy.
Everybody?
How you doing?
I'm all right. Trying to call in here and qualify. If you didn't, if you still remember.
That's a violation.
You can't call in to say you're qualified. You take yourself right out. You just gotta be a natural conversation guy. Bring great chat to the room, and then we qualify you.
I'm inspiring to bring great chat to this phone call, Mike.
Go ahead.
All right. So, I guess I chose a great day to do it as well with your new segment. So, as much as I try to stay off of your new segment list of like stupid people or stupid people things, I have a hypothetical that the further the season progresses for the Sixers, the fan believes Simmons will come through, and I kind of think it kind of goes like this: as far as I think, with all the noise that comes up with him not shooting and him not taking the jumpers and stuff, I think that, like, with anybody else, I think it makes him mad, just because, like, he can't control his narrative and all that. He doesn't shoot, blah blah blah. The guy would be unstoppable. Like you say, I agree with everything you say about him. If he just took the jump shots, everything else he does is honestly probably underrated, just for the fact that, guys like Shaq or Charles Barkley will talk about after a win, what he didn't do. He's such a good player.
That's his talents are special.
Right. Exactly.
Right? His talents are special. This is ridiculous. Well, traded for D'Angelo Russell. What are you kidding me? A special talent for a guy that's just good? It's ridiculous.
It's like if you told a Philadelphia fan, they woke up and that trade happened. That's like a life changer. That's a stupid proposal.
It really is, Brenton. And sorry, you spoiled the soup early with the I called to qualify. Yeah. Can't be doing that.
Can't do it.
You take off Tyrone Lannister, too, when you do that.
Yeah. And the other reason that D'Angelo trade just now, Golden State would walk him here. Because now think about Ben Simmons now. And now you're surrounding him, maybe not this year, with the Splash Brothers. All of a sudden, Ben Simmons does all the dirty work on defense, and he's surrounded by the greatest shooters to ever live. They would do that trade in a second. When a team would do the trade that quickly, that means you obviously don't want to do it. They would look at it as a steal to give up D'Angelo Russell and get Ben. They would look at it as the greatest heist in sports history, the Warriors
For Jalen Rose to say something like that, I go, seriously, dude? I mean, and then people go, well, Jalen Rose knows more basketball than you, anybody. Well, in this case, it doesn't appear so, does it?
Not at all.
That's like what Maverick told Charlie in that meeting about the MIG.
Oh, yeah.
In this case, it doesn't appear so, man, does it? Let's go. Jerome in Elkins Park. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jerome.
Afternoon, the people of Medj. Missinelli, Eganoff, and Johnson. As you might or you probably see, I want to talk about the Sixers. And I want to commend Brett Brown for that game that they just had. The fact that they won against Boston, okay, that's something that picks out. But he really did coach as far as his substitutions, when he took his timeouts. And this thing that has happened with Embiid might have some silver linings. It wasn't his shooting hand that was broke finger or frack or ligament damage. Hopefully they can stay after him to take and use that time to stay in shape. He can still shoot the ball with his hand. So that can be continued.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. Chick-fil-A off limits.
Yes. Well, right? I mean,
for the next 4 weeks. In fact, I'm going to wire him up, and then we're going to put this detector on it, every Chick-fil-A in the area.
Yeah, it's one of the things that we take and get, oh, I'll say me, because I don't want to be a, you know, be say like everybody does this. I'm not that kind of a person. But I heard, listen on one some other show, you know, whatever, that, you know, the Clippers had their moment where they had to have a team meeting. And I was basically saying, well, they're going to be one of the teams that's going to be close to coming out of the West, you know? Here was the fact they had a problem with Leonard having days off, which he had did with Toronto and the grumbling. So the type of things that have happened with the Sixers, they're not unique about it. I mean, you look at Ben Simmons when he does get to the foul line, and I think he avoids contact so he doesn't. His first shot, he may shoot like a line drive, and then he collects himself and he puts the arc on it. So it's not the fact that he can't shoot. He can. It's just, I think the reluctance comes in because, you know, he doesn't want either to look bad or, you know, it's as though, you know, to contribute. But this thing that has happened now with Embiid, it's going to be a proving ground for him and for Brown. So in the long run, I think, you know, there's some benefit.
All right. Well, that's good. You know, Jerome, it wasn't a great call, but it's good enough to qualify. I'm going to qualify, Jerome. What a great call. That's a floor. That's a floor call.
Medj?
Okay.
Medj?
Yeah, that's a floor call. The Medj doesn't work.
No.
Medj does not work.
No. That's why he didn't hear the song.
Right. But, yeah, but Jerome is a good guy.
Good guy.
And he tried hard in that call. That would be what we call the floor.
Right. So it's like, if you're not better than this, you don't get in.
No, right. No acronyms. Right?
Right.
Yeah. And, no poems, despite Natalie's best intentions.
Right.
No poems.
No poems. No poems either. He brought up, though, it is interesting that Ben Simmons shoots that three from the corner all the time in practice. I watch it, and you watch it.
Elbows in.
And you go, dude, what? Why? All right, let's go AJ in West Philly. What's up, AJ?
What's up, Big Mike?
What's going on, man?
I was honest about yesterday, but we're going to get into the Sixers thing real quick.
Okay.
I was looking at the stand. We're only a couple games out the East, but do y'all realize it's only, what, like four or five teams in the West and four or five teams in the East that got winning records, and one of them is the Oklahoma City Thunder?
Mm-hmm.
So when we tripping about the records.
Yeah, they went on a tear, like what, a 13-4 streak, something like that?
No, matter of fact, it's only seven teams or eight teams with a plus 500 record in the entire NBA.
Yes, the Spurs are four games under 500 and are the eighth seed.
Yeah, so we don't have to trip. I think if we remember, Josh Richardson was hurt. So our team has kind of been in flux. But I think with the players being out and with Embiid being out, it gave Richardson room. With Richardson out, it gave Tobias room to flourish. We already know what Joel capable of doing. We need Al Horford, all the new parts to come together. And as you was talking about the bench, I think the bench is rock solid. Guys like Scott.
What?
That rotation.
Well,
that's what a bench looks like.
Come on, AJ.
Why do you think the rest of the teams is below 500?
You don't get any offense off that bench on a consistent basis. You need to get a little more points than that.
Well, that's what I was saying. If our Josh Richardson, Tobias can average 20 with whatever Ben and, you know, Joel do, then we'd be good to go. Now, right. I wanted to talk to you yesterday. You know, I called in, I was talking about Deuce Staley, and my frustration, what I hear as a black man, I wasn't trying to put that on you. And I remember one thing you said about the guy on the pizza box and how that offends you.
Yeah.
You know, we hear and see different things because we all got different experiences. Mm-hmm. Like,
I totally agree with it. Nobody knows that better than I do, right? I get it. I understand. Now, maybe Deuce Staley gets the offensive coordinator job. Would I be bothered by that? No. He should get a chance to do it. I'm merely looking at it like, what is Deuce Staley? What is the attraction of Deuce Staley to do something different? Does Jeffrey Lurie think of Deuce Staley as an innovative guy? I don't know.
You almost talked yourself into it with Deuce not having to play call. But one thing I want to say real quick, we didn't want to give Malcolm Jenkins his money, and now everybody quickly get rid of Malcolm Jenkins. I hope y'all see why players hold out for their money, because that man played every snap, and he was due his check.
You're AJ, you're right, and you're angry. I like it. You got passion. I'm going to qualify you. Boom.
He finished really strong.
Yes,
on that
he
call.
Did. He did.
Because that is a good point. My man was upset about his contract, showed up like all the fans want him to, played literally every snap of 17 games, and the fans, most of them, like, all right, let him walk.
Yes.
That's why they hold out.
That's not right.
Right. That's not right.
Not right what they're doing, though.
No.
Like, you can't draw the line now when it comes to Malcolm Jenkins, because you may have been burned by loyalty somewhere else and counting on older guys to come back. This guy has earned a way to come back.
And
he trusted you.
Right. And the other part is, when 30-year-old guys start getting hurt, they don't stop. Knocking on wood, this guy, this guy for two consecutive years has played every snap. He's not Sproles. He's not Peters, because he hasn't been nicked up. You got to take care of this guy.
All right, let's go Uriah in Marshville. Uriah, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Uriah?
Happy New Year, Mike.
Happy New Year to you, Uriah.
Hey, I would have called you. I actually was on hold last week, and then you guys had a couple guests coming on. I had to get off, so I'm just now talking to you. So check it out, man. I feel as though with all these rumors going around trying to bring back somebody into the Sixers locker room, I heard Rocco is out there in the rumor mill.
Yeah, we talked about him yesterday, about reacquiring him. Is he enough off the bat? I guess he would. I like him better than not.
Well, what about Iguodala? Because I heard he was out
there. He doesn't shoot it. I don't need him. I need somebody who can shoot it. He can't shoot.
Yeah, but Covington is, we already got enough streaky shooters, right? Why do we want to
He at least can shoot it. I mean, they're not street. The other guys aren't shooters who make a few. Rocco at least can be identified as a shooter. Scott's not identified as a shooter. Ennis isn't identified as a shooter. Quirk Miles is like, maybe he'll make a couple, but come on.
Mike, as they say, your ex is your ex for a reason. There's a reason why
Listen, they don't have much leeway to grab Bradley Beal. You know, they got to do what they can. They need a shooter.
Yeah. It's depressing knowing that it seems like every team we play has a guy that can do the pick and roll, he'll throw a lob up to a big guy.
Don't get me wrong about it. Like, I'm not desirable of Rocco, but it would be better than nothing.
Yeah. Well, last thing, Mike, I was down there Monday night for the OKC game.
Mm-hmm.
And we had pretty good seats, and, you know, it was a tight game. It was exciting. And he was right in front of me, Tobias, when he nailed that three in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody jumped out their feet. But the one thing that was funny to me is that I was at the game. I might have been going to get a beer at the time. But people were texting me saying, oh, Embiid's out. And I didn't know what was going on. And then I checked, and I saw a picture of his hand. And I think I dropped my phone on the seat underneath me, and I just that was ugly looking.
It is ugly looking. You turn it's natural. You turn your head away. Just like, have you ever seen a bone, a fracture that goes through skin? Have you ever seen that?
Yes, it's disgusting.
Yeah, it's terrible. Or a dislocated ankle that you've seen sometimes.
Anything
dislocated is you get queasy with it when you see it.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Ugh. All right, let's go Scott in Doylestown. Scott, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Scott.
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's up, Scott?
Yeah, I want to talk about the offensive coordinator position. I really don't feel Deuce Daly should get the job. And my thoughts on that is that I really feel like they need an experienced offensive coordinator. I just feel like with Doug Peterson, head coach, offensive coordinator, play caller, it's too much. And I hate to bring it up, but I just feel like, you know, if you have an experienced guy in there who can help develop the plan and give them that freedom, you know, it takes some of the work off of Peterson.
Yeah, I got you, but you also have to include this. An experienced offensive coordinator is not going to come here just to be some backup dude. An experienced offensive coordinator wants to come here and call plays. or else he's not going to take the job. So that reduces your pool unless the head coach is willing to give up play calling.
I know, but I just feel like this year, you know, that report came out, I think, towards the end of the year that Peterson was all up in the wide receiver's faces trying to motivate them, and then the play calling changed the last month or so. I really feel like Peterson needs an offensive coordinator he can't groom, and he can't put too much, you know, emphasis on someone who's inexperienced because they're not going to work towards the strengths.
But I just got to tell you, experience may come with he has to give up the play calls.
Well, then you know what? Maybe they need to think about that.
Well, they might. Jeffrey Lurie is going to put his heavy hand in this thing, then maybe he's going to put the heavy hand to the extent where he goes, I've got this nouveau offense coordinator, and he's been wowed before by the nouveau idea, and he's going to come in, and we'd like him to call plays, Doug.
Yeah, I just feel like an experienced guy can come in, just, you know, take some of the pressure off of Peterson, really work with the guys, and I don't know. If he has to give up the play call, let him give up the play call. Because the one thing that really impressed me with Peterson this year was the fact they never quit on him.
Yeah.
They never quit on him. And you could have.
Yeah, but you're talking about a guy with immense pride that's won a Super Bowl. And you go up to him and you go, hey, dude, guess what? You're a successful guy, but we're taking the play calling away from him. Is that going to fly?
Well, I don't know. If they're all as collaborative as they say, then that should be a good
thing. Yeah, there's pride. Personal pride gets involved here. Why? You're going to do what? Well, a Super Bowl. Take play call away from me? Gonna make me look ridiculous. You gonna do that to me? Yeah, he already made him look ridiculous yesterday in a press conference, so maybe he doesn't care. Let's go, Matt Hazleton. Matt, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Matt.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call, as always.
What's up, Matt?
So I want to talk Sixers. I mostly talk about the Eagles, but I want to move on a little bit. And something that frustrates me, and I know a lot of times they get off to a fast start, but I notice when they don't, When they get off to those slow starts, it feels like the Eagles, where they just have no energy and are completely apathetic. And Mike Zumoff often mentions it, or Allah mentions, oh, this guy doesn't shoot very well from three. And then he hits about three in a row because they're late on rotation or late getting out there.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to say that frustrates me first. And then I had more of a question with regards to a possible trade.
Mm-hmm.
The Pistons, so they're struggling, and, you know, it was put out there that Andre Drummond was on the block to be moved. But do you think that there's any chance they have enough to go after, you know, either a combination or one or the other? I'd like the combination of Luke Kennard and Derrick Rose.
We talked about Derrick Rose yesterday. Luke Kennard, interesting. I guess that you can zero in on that kind of a deal. How much is Rose making?
I'm gonna look it up. It's not a lot.
I think that actually both of them are viable. Derrick Rose is interesting. He's playing well, and he can give you energy off the bench. And Kennard can shoot a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't hate the acquisition either.
Okay.
All right. I'm gonna 7.3 million. Wow, that's doable.
And then Kennard. Yeah, you could package like that's, four. Yeah,
pretty good suggestions. I'm gonna qualify for the tickets.
They don't have enough to get both.
Not both. Luke Kennard doesn't make anything, does he?
No, it's not about the money. The Pistons can get more from other teams if they were trading both.
Yeah.
You can get Rose. You might be able to get Rose. The issue is there are rumors that Rose, he's from Chicago. He wants to settle into a Midwest low-pressure type of thing in this current phase, and he may not be wanting to go to a contender. It may be fake, but that's a rumor that he may not have that oomph to go, because the Lakers also have interest. Lakers have less to give up than the Sixers. There's a bunch of contenders that think, oh, Derrick Rose, and the rumors are he might just be comfortable where he is and just be playing it out and making nice money, and just he might not have that zeal for winning a title.
Kennard's shooting 40% from three.
That's why they don't have enough to trade for both. Another team would give them more than the Sixers could give up. If you call them and say Mike Scott, Zaire, a 1 in 2021 or 2022.
It's going to be a good year. He's kind of flew under my radar. And he's averaging 16 a game.
Yeah, the other part is he doesn't move very well on the other end, which you might be able to absorb, but, you know.
It's shoot first. mentality at this point.
Right. You're not doing a whole lot on the other end.
All right. 610-632-0975. We come back. We'll let you hear the interview we had a little earlier with Brett Brown and some interesting comments he had on Ben Simmons. Stay tuned for that. It is the Mike Missanelli Show right here on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philly.
The Mike Missanelli Show.
All righty, it is 4:30. It's time to get an update on our Twitter poll, brought to us by Paul B. Moyer and Sons, Natalie Eganoff.
Yes, Mike, it is time. And we have over 2,200 votes on this one today. Was Jeffrey Lurie out of line if he overruled Doug Peterson on his assistance? 24% say yes, 76% say no. So, yeah,
Mr. Owner can do whatever he wants.
Sure can.
Yes. Okay. Earlier today, we had the Sixers coach Brett Brown on to talk about state of the team and last night's great win, 109-98 over Boston Celtics, third straight win over the Celtics, which is always good news. And here's how it sounded, my interview with Sixer coach Brett Brown. Let's welcome in Brett Brown on the Comcast Business Hotline. Brett, great win last night.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. It's always good to beat Boston.
You know, that was a great NBA game, and you've had a few hours to digest the game from last night. What was your take on how you guys played?
Two things most stood out to me. I thought defensively, when it mattered most in the fourth period, I thought that we showed signs of embracing sort of life without Joel and playing sort of a different way and doing it successfully, one. And two, I thought the execution down the stretch, just whether it was, you know, not turning the ball over or getting efficient shots, getting the ball into the correct people's hands, I was proud of the way that that we walked that game down.
So it turned around really in the third quarter where you made a big run to get back in the game and you had a lot of energy in that third quarter. What were you telling them at halftime to do?
Just that, you know, the score, I thought that we poked ourselves in the eye right before halftime. You could feel it swinging a little bit. But I thought that we were on the right path. Like my anxiety comes when you just don't feel like, you know, the path is right or the spirit's right. I thought their spirit was good. I thought the attention to detail with how we prepared and the scouting report was good. And I tried to just more remind them of that.
All right, so let's discuss the Joel being out part of how you're going to have to play now. Because let's face it, realistically, he's probably going to be out a month. I know he's going to get reevaluated in 2 weeks, but you know, surgery's no joke, and then the rehab and the whole bit. And you alluded to it yesterday. You're going to have to play differently. You're going to play up-tempo, and you're going to have to play hard scrambling defense. Is this it was a sustainable last night. Is this sustainable for that period of time without Joel?
Well, let's go to defense because you used a word that I don't want to do. Like, I don't want to scramble. I don't want to scramble. I do think that there will be elements of our pressure that will put us in more scrambled environments. This is true. But in general, like, that's the punishment of the NBA. If you're in rotations too much, the league is too good. It's too offensive. They shoot the ball well enough. They drive it well enough. You're not in position to defensive rebound. It's a recipe for losing. And so I do hope to avoid the scramble while sort of admitting, you know, you don't have the luxury of 7'2" all defensive player and Joel Embiid behind it. And so with Al, you know, let's just go there first. What's Al going to be in pick and roll defense? And without doing a clinic, you know, we have answers and it will affect people behind that. If you go to just offense, it's true. Like, we need to play fast. It needs to be a little bit more of a track meet. We don't have the post target or the need to wait for the post target like I felt like we did in Joel. And so both sides of the ball on first glance, that's my take on life without Joe.
All right. Now, it seemed to free up Al a little bit last night. He almost had an awakening last night. And you could see that you guys played differently and he seems more energized. The whole thing about this year was trying to get him to blend and it was coming along slowly. You were trying to figure out how to make him effective to play with Joel. So now this all this time that Joel is out is taking away time to blend that particular situation. How do you feel about that?
I mean, it's obviously not ideal. If you had a perfect world, you'd be playing with Joel and inching this thing along. But in the event or with the circumstance that we don't have Joe. I see daylight. I see a positive. I feel like we can rekindle his confidence and make him more of a focal point. I think the mistake that sometimes we all make is, you know, effectively he was sort of our third option, you know, at times our fourth option. And, you know, he didn't really have a chance to feature as much as he did with previous teams. We all get he's a gifted pick and pop guy. I think the difference with Al Horford in Boston and in Atlanta was when he blended pick and pop and pick and roll. So I think this time frame, you know, we can rekindle some spirit.
All right. Now, the people that knocked Ben Simmons had to see last night's game for what you obviously see in Ben and the all-around game and what he does in all areas. I thought he was spectacular last night. And I know you did too, right?
Absolutely. And I tell you what, like, I respect you saying that because if it's not like he's got 30, 15, and 10, oftentimes, like, the subtleties of things that don't appear on a stat sheet get ignored. And I hear you, Mike. I agree with you.
But there is the elephant in the room. And so we have to address that now. Now, it's you have come out recently and thrown it publicly. You hadn't done that before. And I know you think this is an overblown story at times, but you did come out and say you want him to shoot 1-3 a game. And then you said, I failed at that. So, when we look at this whole situation, how is it going to cure itself when Joel does come back and you're going to have to need certain things from Ben Simmons?
Well, it is true. I'm always amused, I think, and that really is the word, at the attention that this gets. And like Ben and I talk about, like, do you realize that if you shot 1-3 a game, in the blink of an eye, this just disappears. It just goes away. But it's something that, you know, has received attention, and now it's gained momentum, and so here we are. And I do think, like, the things that probably you or the listeners should hear the loudest is my whole thing is space. Like, when you're not the person that is in the post, where are you? When you're not the person that is in a pick and roll, you're three other people somewhere on the floor, where are you? When there is dribble penetration, where are you? If Tobias has the ball in early offense and he's a dribble out guy and he's sort of conquering the middle with a live ball and you're running a lane, where are you? And so my world is space. And I think that if we can continue to get him to space, then he's going to figure out how to spend his money. And when I dissect the game, and I do it every single game with him, you know, it's not as frequent as you might think. And he's so gifted a slasher. Like, he sees daylight. He's either going to punish a blind defender for an offensive rebound, or it's just going to chew up empty space by running it up somebody's shoulders. And so somewhere in the middle of all that, we concede it does have to happen. It hasn't happened to date, so therefore we have this conversation. And I own it. Like, I'm the coach, and it's still something that I feel responsible to help him grow this part of his game.
Now, Brad, I'm going to ask you this, because going public, was that a reflection of your frustration? Because a lot of people think you don't tell him to shoot. And the whole staff, the whole world has pretty much communicated to him that he's got to shoot a basketball. So by going public, are you trying to, like, speed that process up, and that's your last resort?
I'm doing whatever I can do to help him. And, like, everybody would have their own opinion of what that looks like. And I feel a responsibility to help a 23-year-old find a new toy. And I feel like once he does this, because I see him shoot where others don't all the time, and he's a capable shooter. And I do think it's going to happen, and I think we're all going to look in the rearview mirror, and him especially, and think, can you believe this? This thing reached this level of attention for what? And I think that he's going to shoot one, he's going to make one, then he's going to do it again. And I feel like there will be momentum because it hasn't happened. Here it is. And so my decision on how do I help move him along, sometimes it's a little bit public. It very much is private. And I want to do this with him. And to date, we have not done this. And so therefore, I make the comment I made a few days ago. And it's just something that, you know, is on my mind, but probably not as much as others.
Was he bothered by your comment publicly?
I don't think there was anything wrong with it. It wasn't And you know, I've been in the city with you for now 7 years. It's not my style. Like, I don't embarrass anybody in the newspaper. And it's just not what I believe in. And I said what I said because I think it. It wasn't meant to be a jab at all. And he knows me. We've known each other for a very, very long time. And he gets it. Like, if you pulled him aside and you downloaded him, he understands that this, too, has to be something that he has to own. He's got to own it, and I'm here to help him.
So he didn't snap back at you and say, why'd you do that?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. So let's get to this question. Why don't you think he does it?
We all get our ideas, and it's stuff that, you know, it's something that I personally think that he uses the space and ends up penetrating more and can dunk more and can offensive rebound more. I think a lot of it is he has had success, different success, using this space and achieving different results. And, you know, so it's a habit we got to break. And from time to time, he's going to have to shoot it. I mean, and just look at this interview. We've just spoken 5 minutes about Ben Simmons. I mean, really, it's a... So I'm happy to talk as much as you want to, Mike. But
no, I got you. Now, let me just a couple quick ones before I let you go. You know, most people look at this team, and I have the opinion, I don't know if you have it or not, you probably do, that you probably could use somebody a little more offensive off the bench that you can count on to get your buckets. Do you believe that, and do you think that will happen?
I think that, I can't say loud enough the respect and appreciation I have for Elton Brand. You know, it's a very seamless pairing. He and I coached him. There's no, like, hidden agendas. It's incredibly open and transparent. And he and I talk all the time about, if April 15th were tomorrow, like, what do we look into our crystal ball? What's our pre-mortem? What do we wish we had? And in the meantime, like, we all get trade deadlines are coming up. And, you know, we're going to take what we got and try to make it work. The city should be elated with Matisse Thybulle. And I thought Furkan last night was great, and James made some big shots. I feel like the thing that is a little bit different this year than in previous years, in your rendering it into like a catch shot JJ guy, I think.
Yes.
I feel like, yeah, no, I hear you. Like, there's a pick and roll, a live ball guy. It's why Trey Burke has come in and put his hand up. And he's different. People that can create off the dribble. People can run a pick and roll. People that can get into the seams of a zone. You know, there is a need, I think, for that too. And we're trying to develop and grow the current roster to be able to do that. And in the event that Elton decides to do something in a few weeks, then I'm with him.
All right, last question. It's about Pell. Now, he looks like he can bring some quick five-position energy, like a few years when Rashawn Holmes gave you that kind of energy. And you're going to have to decide whether you can have to sign him to a full contract. What are the prospects of that?
Well, let me talk on my side of the fence, and ultimately I'm going to tell you Elton's going to figure it out, but I'll talk to your points because I agree with them. He is different. He's really different, you know, and you bring up Rashawn. That's not my analogy is more Nerlens, because, like, he's a legitimate rim protector. He's a fantastic roller. You know, and he's big, 6'11" and some, maybe. And so, like, he got live legs. He can switch out on the pick and roll. There are a lot of NBA skills that he has that I think are very attractive to me. And so Elton will figure out what that means with roster construction and, you know, caps and all that. But I can tell you, I thought he was really good last night. And he for sure has NBA skills that we should pay attention to.
All right, you got a couple of tough games coming up, one in Dallas with Luka. I assume Ben will play Luka?
You know, you'd suspect so. How much fun is that kid to watch? Like, we played him in his very first game in China. And it takes you about 2 seconds to realize the unique gifts that he has. You always, when I'm watching him, you know, you don't realize how quick he is in his mind and with the ball and deceptive with his dribble. He's not slow of foot. Like, he makes up for it with just quickness with the ball in his head. He's really, really good. I look forward to almost from a fan standpoint, you know, seeing him, Ben Simmons on him, you'd expect some. And I think the, you know, we may have to look at some double teams as well.
All right, Brett, listen, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it. Great night, win last night. See if we can keep it going.
Okay, Mike, thanks.
All right, that was Brett Brown. We'll take a quick break. On the other side, a very interesting, humorous, and fascinating Twitter beef between Kevin Durant and Kendrick Perkins. It's awesome. We're back after this on 97.5 The Fanatic.
The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
All right, it's 4:50 on the Mike Missinelli Show on a Friday. We're wrapping up the week. Tomorrow we're going to be 66 degrees. What? Where is this coming from? What about Sunday?
65.
Is it really?
It's supposed to rain at some point.
Oh.
On Sunday.
Look, am I squeezing 2 days of golf here? What?
You might.
Look at you.
Ground's probably soft.
Yeah.
All right, that's okay. All right, so let me get to this Kendrick Perkins, Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is very sensitive, isn't he?
Yes.
He's so sensitive.
Yup, he got the burner account. He got to respond. He can't just mute people or block him.
Imagine that Eddie Murphy stand-up, his first one, Delirious. Yeah. Where he's talking about Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm. And the lady said Michael Jackson's so sensitive.
And so is Kevin Durant. So this starts out with Kendrick Perkins, who's an all-time mutt, right? So he has no room to even like get into this conversation. So it starts out, Kendrick Perkins kind of takes a swipe at Kevin Durant by saying that Russell Westbrook is the best player to have ever put on an Oklahoma City Thunder jersey. So that sparks some Twitter replies, and Kendrick Perkins then chimes in with this. KD lost in the second round without Russ when I was there, so what that mean? And now Kevin Durant comes flying into the conversation.
Yep.
So Kevin Durant tweets, yeah, and our starting center at Kendrick Perkins averaged a whopping 2-3 during that series. You played hard, though, champ. LOL.
That's a good jump.
It is good.
That's a good one.
But a hothead like Kendrick Perkins ain't going to take that.
Nope.
So Kendrick Perkins goes, boy, stop. You did the weakest move in NBA history. Up on a team 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals, and then go join in the following season? Heart of a champion right there.
That's good line.
This is good stuff. So now, here comes Kevin Durant. Weak is starting at center, playing real minutes with no production. Should have worked on your skills as much as I did. This is so good. Kendrick Perkins then goes, that's fine. You worked that hard and still had to go to a 73-9 team. Truth be told, you don't even feel like a real champ. You have hard time sleeping at night, huh? Knowing that you took the coward way out. Whoo! TKO. And I think Durant quit on that note, didn't he?
Yeah, I think that was the end of it. Because there is no comeback for that. And he's not still with him, so clearly he didn't think he was a champion.
I guess Kerry Perkins didn't like KD that much when they played together.
Well, that's because, got to go back to the Harden trade. They didn't make the Harden trade. They made the Harden trade because the owner didn't want to pay the luxury tax.
Uh-huh.
All he would have had to do was use the whatever to get rid of Perkins. But he didn't want to do that. He wanted to keep Perkins.
Uh-huh.
Then he goes and gets you 2 points and 3 rebounds, and they're like, wait a minute, we let James Harden leave for this guy? And they apparently, in the locker room, Westbrook was like, that's my dog. Apparently, Durant was like, nah, we got rid of James Harden for this dude.
That's exceptional. That's a good beef.
Yeah.
Hey, you wonder why these guys just don't text each other this stuff. You know? They make it a beef.
Yeah, they just talk.
They have to get applause.
Uh-huh.
All right, we'll take a break. 5 o'clock hours ahead. Again, we're qualifying people for suite tickets, and we will be in the suite. Sixers game on Wednesday, January 15th versus the Nets. All you got to do is bring a good call to the table, and we'll qualify you. The passes also include a parking pass. It's the Mike Missinelli Show. Back after this.